You hear the music, and that means it's time for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See, and I'm here with the Pop Culture Happy Hour gang as it is currently constituted. Ooh. So let's investigate who's around the table. All right, how about you, Stephen? Why don't you tell everybody who you are?
I am Stephen Thompson with NPR Music.
And how about you down there, Trey? Who are you?
Trey Graham. I am your editor on the Monkey See blog and the movies editor at NPR.org.
Now, this is not a tall, bald fellow sitting over here, so I'm pretty sure
it's not
Glenn Weldon. Yes.
Why do I have a Weldonian-shaped hole in my heart?
It's true. I do.
Because Glenn Weldon is in Puerto Rico where he is tweeting from a swim-up bar.
That's true. That is absolutely true. It's one of the most heartless, nasty things I've ever seen anyone do to me.
And from a hammock.
He was in the swim-up bar, and then he was in the hammock. It's like you can follow him from one situation that's better than yours to another.
Yep. Right. Is there anything better than a swim-up bar?
And what is that voice I hear? Oh, why don't you tell us
who
you
are?
Wait,
that's not Glenn
Weldon.
Is there anything better than a bar, actually, says the pregnant lady. Now that I think about it. Sorry.
Who the heck are you, pregnant lady?
I am Barry Hardiman. I am an editor at Talk of the Nation.
And Barry, as regular listeners to Pop Culture Happy Hour know, Barry is our most heavily used fill-in.
Barry, you were impregnated before you appeared on Pop Culture Happy Hour, correct?
I was. I think so. I was. But I was sitting over there at the time.
So if Trey turns up pregnant.
Right. Then we'll know. It's
we'll
that
know
chair.
It's the chair. Anyway. So the first thing we have on our agenda this week, since we're all here together once again, I thought we would discuss pop culture. I don't know how y'all feel about that.
But, I did not come prepared for that.
Shoot. Yeah. I was here to talk about Iraq.
Yes. So topic number one we're going to call Pop Culture Punching Bags. And what we're going to discuss is something that gets an enormous amount of flack that you think deserves a defense. Darn it.
Doggone it.
Something no one is sticking up for that you would like to stick up for. Would you like to go first, Thompson?
I picked an incredibly, just a big fat meatball pitch over the plate because I know that Linda Holmes has my back on this, and that we've talked about this extensively on the show before. But I figured, why don't we have me go first, because mine is a very general topic.
Sure.
And mine is, simply enough, reality television. I actually find, legitimately, straight up, that reality television is some of the most entertaining television that I watch, and some of the most entertaining entertainment that I consume. Far better than books or...
Send your angry emails.
No, I loved the book I read. Don't get
Stephen
me wrong.
Stephen barely reads a book.
Stephen resentfully reads a book.
Stephen reads only one book.
Stephen reads only one book.
But I often sort of find myself in having to sort of, it comes off as self-deprecating.
Of course.
When I talk about the fact, I'm this dullard and I barely read and I'm, blah, blah, blah.
All true.
All of which is true. I am a dullard and I watch an extraordinary amount of reality television. And over the years, I've kind of come to go from, it's kind of embarrassing, but what I really love is reality television, to I love reality television. I think reality television is, when it's done well, just like anything else, 90% of it is garbage. But when it's done well, I think it combines for me, I'm also a sports fan, and it combines a lot of the excitement I get from watching sports with unpredictability, unlikely outcomes where you don't know. Like if I watch a crime procedural, the odds that I'm going to know exactly how it turns out are so much less than the odds that I will know how even a mediocre season of Survivor will turn out.
Right. You like a lot of different kinds of reality television. The kinds of reality television that you like, I would say I've seen you be most interested in competitive shows like Survivor and The Amazing Race.
I would say
The Apprentice when it was good. And
I would say
like
and I'm actually enjoying this season of The Apprentice, but it's a little unhinged, but that's good. I enjoy elimination-based reality television competitions.
Right.
I am not a fan of Real Housewives of any place.
Right.
Barry just made a face.
She did. Just make a face.
Her lips are pursed together, her eyes are bugged out, and her
much
fingers...
Much like a Real Housewife!
I just keep...
You're waiting for your apology, aren't you? You're just waiting for me to apologize.
As someone who cannot look away from this show, I keep hoping that the A-List is going to turn into an elimination show.
But when
and
I
the
say...
elimination will be bloody.
Yes.
It will involve Sam Ryan. sized swords.
Ew.
Even though they're all elimination-based competitive shows, some of them are higher in brow, like Top Chef.
Sure.
Project Runway. Right. Others of them are lower in brow, like Hell's Kitchen.
Sure.
So there just seems
Rock
to
of
be...
Love Bus.
Rock of Love Bus. Yeah, it's got eliminations, all right. But there's... there just seems to be something about that format in general that you really respond to.
It's a very versatile format. And in a way, it's a little bit like the unfolding of a football season.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of contained to roughly 10 to 15 weeks,
yeah.
And at the end there's a champion, yeah. And maybe you're happy about that champion.
And like, maybe a concussion.
And several concussions, traumatic brain injuries often feature into both.
People losing their jobs partway through the season.
You know, I wasn't going to say anything about Brett Favre eating it because his team won, but the Dallas Cowboys eating it at the hands of the Green Bay Packers is one thing that is making me happy this
week. And you can mark off your obligatory Green Bay Packers medal on your bingo card at home.
But at the end of a sort of self-contained season of a Top Chef, a Project Runway, the most recent season of Project Runway was enormously entertaining, and yet I was incredibly unhappy with the outcome of it. Mm. I was not happy with who won this season of Project Runway. But at the same time, if it were any other kind of program, that particular winner would not have won.
Well, I used to say that all the time about Survivors, that the way that I always felt like it wasn't fixed is that now and then you would have just an unbelievably unsatisfying winner that nobody would feel good about, the audience wouldn't feel good about, nobody would really seem excited about, and the show would sort of have to almost apologize for. And I would say to people, if you were going to fix the ending, you would never have fixed it to have her win.
Yeah.
You
would have all of these characters around whom that franchise has been built.
Right.
None of those people have ever actually won.
Right.
Obviously, there's selective editing, they're weaving together storylines, mm-hmm. there is fictionalization mm-hmm. that is bound to go on in the editing process. If you watched it 24/7, you'd be one of those people who watches Big Brother feeds, and I don't recommend being one of those people.
No.
Hello, bed rest.
So anyway, that's my passionate defense of reality television, but I would also add that I just enormously enjoy, and this is something I know I have in common with Linda Holmes, I enjoy this sort of armchair philosophizing about human behavior.
There's a sociology aspect where you're kind of looking at it. And I always tell people there are sort of blunt force things about gender politics in particular that you will never see any more clearly than you see them on Survivor. The men who won Survivor tended to play one way, and the women who won Survivor tended to play a very different way. The women tended to be women who were more sort of played it relatively kind of soft,
inert,
played a relatively non-threatening kind of game, whereas the men who won tended to win by being sort of strong alpha types.
Providers,
take charge, run the show, run the alliance, be seen as the guy who's in charge. And so things like that you do see. And what I always say to people is, yes, it's true that it creates artifice when the camera is on you. But it's still how those people behaved with a camera on them. They are reacting in some way that has something to do with who they are and how they're socialized. So I think that after Stevens, we should go next to Barry's so that Barry can tell us what's her pop culture punching bag.
Barry's making a face again.
Barry's got a pop culture punching
bag.
Because,
first of all, I cannot disagree with almost anything you just said.
Except for your love of the Real Housewives of Everett.
Deep, abiding love. And not just because it's good entertainment, because it's actually sometimes not. But, I mean, I like nothing better than to, like, settle in, watch forever. Sometimes you can dip in and dip out, and you're like, oh, that little dog got a haircut or whatever. And that's fine. But here's the thing.
Oh, that queen just got lip injections.
Exactly. Again.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that I think is actually fabulous about it on the armchair philosophizing level, which is that there is no franchise at all on television right now that proves more definitively that money does not buy happiness.
Right.
Yeah. Or, I mean, good lips. Like, I mean, there are many things that money does not buy.
Good style.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And I happen to...
Taste of any kind.
And you have to... I mean, you know, I watch a lot of reality TV, too. I'm actually fascinated by the fact that we,
intersect in these ways. Like, I don't watch Survivor, but I do watch the Real World Road Rules Challenge whenever it comes around.
Nice.
I mean, that's sort of like the difference. That's like the non-Tolstoy level of, I mean, it's terrible.
Well, and I'm a hardcore watcher, not every season, but I've watched most seasons of The Bachelor.
Right. And sure, you would be surprised how much The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills resembles The Bachelor in
they need to tone. Vote. They need to vote them off. And they, need, they really, really do. There has to be an eliminations of some
but
kind.
But there is.
There's quitting in a huff. There's a difference between quitting in a huff.
Yeah, but there's also sort of winding up on the bottom of the pile.
Right.
Like, it's, you don't get eliminated exactly.
No,
but you
just get stepped on and your extensions get pulled out at a country club. I mean, you know, and granted, like, you can't weigh it. I mean,
maybe
for
it's
instance,
just too close to my actual life.
They are extensions.
But I do think that there is this thing, and I can't, you know, right now there are simultaneous housewives on, there's Atlanta and there's Beverly Hills, and I actually had to make a choice because I realized that there was a small part of myself that was really just beginning to atrophy. And I chose The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills because
it Barry's choice.
It is the sequel to the Styron classic. I think the Beverly Hills franchise particularly illustrates this. I mean, you actually have, you know, first of all, you have a lady whose last name is Vanderpump.
And see, you would never see that in scripted television outside of a
Vanderpump.
Oh, I mean, come now. Mid-80s
dynasty.
Outside of a
mid-80s teen comedy.
Yeah. You have the 60, maybe it was 50, the $50,000 or $60,000 birthday party for the 4-year-old who is miserable the entire time. Every shot
Look at who her parents are.
Right, well, and if you saw this woman's lips, this is Lips. I can't remember her last name. It's like Lips Vanderpump.
Lips Vanderpump.
Sadly, I don't think she's actually related to the Vanderpump.
I am going as Lips Vanderpump.
I think I think, first of all, if your name is Vanderpump, you should be
you should have pneumatic lips.
You should be manufacturing the product that is plumping up one's
lips. You should
lips.
Be exactly. pumping something. Whoa. How would that happen?
Anyway. Dial it back there, Barry.
All right. You have the miserable 4-year-old. You have the wife, first of all, who gives the little girl the beautiful diamond necklace, and then the husband who completely undermines her by giving her a puppy. And at the end of the day, does it bother me that I do not have a Barbie-shaped diamond necklace or a Barbie-shaped lips or whatever? You know, no, because it actually turns out I'm so thrilled to go upstairs, you know, to my tiny little bedroom with very little crystal. Mm-hmm. Say very little. I mean, none, actually. Now that I think about it.
But you're not planning on showering your child. With,
no.
So there's a certain amount of schadenfreude with watching those shows.
Yes.
You're watching rich, unpleasant people.
Right. Mostly Freuda. And I, you know, and it's really, you know, and there is this lesson at the end, which is, guess what? Everybody's got the same problems. Mm-hmm. Husband got the kid a puppy. Undermined you.
I think that's very true.
I just find that Real Housewives is just a constant onslaught of people airing grievances, and I find it to sort of infect the dialogue.
The New Jersey, especially the second. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm the person that is about to say the second installment of Jersey was frustrating in that. This is less because you have your share of grievances, and then, I guess because we're really in the exposition, it's the, I have 4 nannies and a house manager for 2 children. That's true, Camille Grammer, I'm looking at you. Right now
so
it's not so grievances.
You know?
I mean,
right.
You have to wait for them to
And the
form.
People, the real sort of bickering is between sisters, and you're like, well, those are sisters, and they were child stars, what do you expect? You know?
Right.
So I know what you mean. And we all know that the real grievance is coming at the end with Kelsey Grammer. Talk about that casual fool.
All right, Trey Graham, how about you? Pop culture punching bag.
Well, I was going to say boiled peanuts and okra, just to get Glenn Weldon riled up, but he's in Puerto Rico tweeting from a hammock. So in his absence, I'm going to have to nominate, instead of okra or boiled peanuts, a man who is widely thought of as the okra and boiled peanuts of musical theater. And by this, of course, I mean Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Knock it out.
Just fell in love with you all over again. No.
Now, you may say that there is no possibility of redemption for the man who brought you the song Memory, or who is responsible for inflicting Sarah Brightman on an unsuspecting public. But at its best, his music can summon feelings in an audience without necessarily cheapening those feelings. And those are not my words. Those are the words of Ian Jack, who edited Granta, the literary magazine for more than a decade.
This big guns. This is the first time Grant has been
I was
going to
say,
that.
This pop culture happy hour has taken a turn.
Yes, it
we
has.
Are done talking about The Bachelor, and we are now talking about Granta.
Well, not for long. We're going to go back to talking about Andrew Lloyd Webber. He is widely thought of as this sort of terrible schlockmeister, but what you have to remember is that he sort of made his career with a couple of musicals that were very new and very different and were sort of challenging. Jesus Christ Superstar was thought of as this sort of anti-religious blast, you know, that questioned the reality of the resurrection. And this was back in the 60s, early 70s, mm-hmm. You know, at a time when commercial musical theater didn't do that, right? And then there was Evita, which was this tremendously successful thing that introduced a whole new kind of singing. My friend Ricky Ian Gordon today, when I called him to talk about this, described as the high belt. There's all this really high-lying vocal line, and you mm-hmm. have to sing it at the top of your lungs in the Broadway belt style. That kind of thing didn't happen. Before Evita, really, there were no shows that demanded that style of singing. The singers who would sing those high-lying lines would be classically trained, and they would sing them in a classical style. Lloyd Webber has written a couple of pieces that begin to show what his real skills are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking particularly of the set of cello variations that he wrote for his brother, which sort of got adapted into a show called Song and Dance. And one of the variations became that show's big hit song, which is a clean, pretty little number. Very, very simple, because remember, it's a riff on this one little phrase from the original Paganini.
I don't know what's going on. Can't work it out at all. Whatever made you choose me, I just can't believe my eyes. You look at me as though you couldn't bear to lose me. Now, no matter where I am, no matter what I do, I see your face appear.
And in the mid-80s, he wrote a requiem as a kind of exercise, as a kind of purging of demons when his father died. He financed its production himself, and it became this strange hit. I mean, there was an MTV music video of the Pia Jesu of this song that was playing in rotation on MTV opposite, you know, Thriller.
Mm-hmm.
It was very strange. There are operatic pastiches in Phantom of the Opera mm-hmm. that are fairly accomplished.
You know, they're good.
There is a relatively thoughtful pastiche of a Verdi sextet, I think. The song Prima Donna, to my ear, sounds very much like one of Verdi's big sextets.
What do you think about that, Stephen?
Actually, you know what? I do have thoughts on this, believe it or not. What I will say, to sort of concur with what Trey is saying, to fan out beyond Andrew Lloyd Webber's world, is I think there is a tendency, in terms of why he is a pop cultural punching bag, to take whoever the biggest, most popular, most successful, most prolific, most blah, blah, blah person and say, well, this guy's obviously a hack because he's so incredibly popular. And I would liken him in that way to like a Stephen King.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes.
You know who can, you know who can write Stephen King.
King. Yeah. Yep.
And I wasn't suggesting Trey was done. I was merely breaking in for a little. Please, Trey, finish your argument.
This is exactly on point what Stephen says. I mentioned Ricky Ian Gordon, who is a composer who's worked sort of on both sides of the musical theater and opera divide, and he had sort of nothing but respectful things to say about the man's instincts and his knack for doing exactly that, making things that appeal to a humongous audience and make that audience very happy.
Well, and to ultimately build up the size of the potential audience for everyone.
Oh, sure,
His
absolutely.
Rising tide lifts a lot of boats.
Yes, absolutely. Ricky specifically cited an example. He had worked on a project, a relatively small project, but Hal Prince was involved. Harold Prince, who was the producer of a couple of Lloyd Webber's shows.
Mm-hmm.
And Ricky said, we were working on this thing. Hal Prince had given us some backing. And, you know, I talked to him one day and he said, well, you can thank Phantom of the Opera for this.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's concretely what
and
you
also,
just said is exactly right.
Phantom of the Opera, let me just say, Music of the Night is a beautiful song. I'm sorry. Jesus Christ Superstar has great.
Oh my God.
I was just going to say that.
I don't know how to love him. If there's a better pop melody than that,
I don't know.
I was just going to say the same thing. I saw a cross-cast college production when I was at Oberlin. That is a really powerful show. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's easy to make fun of various elements of it, and it does have certain, especially when a lot of the versions that you hear are produced like the 70s.
Right.
So it feels very 70s.
Well, some of the lyrics.
That's a powerful show.
Some of the lyrics feel really dated. But you see it start to finish, yeah.
You know, you mentioned, casting doubt on the reality of the resurrection. But to me, what I always get from that show is that it presents that as a story about human beings, mm-hmm. you know, people mm-hmm. who interact with each other in recognizably human ways. That in that show, Jesus is very intimidated by the idea or made uncomfortable by this, swelling of freakish attention, what mm-hmm. feels like freakish attention.
It also asks what is a kind of complicated theological question for an entertainment of its kind, which is that, assuming God does love all of us, where was God for Judas Iscariot?
Of mm-hmm. course. There's no, you can't take anything away from how powerful not only that show, but I think a fair amount of what he's written
I actually didn't
is.
Know that people made fun of Jesus Christ Superstar. I'm sort of horrified.
I think it's another one of those things where honestly, well, like Stephen was saying, the image that something has as popular tends to meld with an idea that it's therefore schlocky and mm-hmm. hacky.
It's an incredibly elitist impulse that a lot of people have.
Right, exactly.
Whether they mean to have it or not, whether they know they have it or not.
And it happens at every level. It happened with freedom.
Absolutely.
I mean, all of a sudden, we have the,
Absolutely. And I think the comparison to Stephen King is spot on. If you've read very much Stephen King, you know that Stephen King writes the kinds of books that he writes because that's what he's interested in. It's not because he can't write. Except
no, in fact, he's kind of a writer's writer.
Horror elements. Well, and a lot of the stuff that he's done that's the most famous is not necessarily technically horror, except in very limited ways. If you take a book like The Stand, that's not really a horror book.
That's a psychological.
Again, that's a brick. Yeah. That's a brick of a book about sociology primarily. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a great comparison.
Cool.
I'm glad you mentioned it, Trey.
Yep.
Too, because now I have really awesome songs in my head, and I might yell Judas in the middle of this. Judas!
Perfect. Well, mine, I originally brought this topic up partly because I'd been thinking a lot about the horrible pop culture drubbing regularly taken by the field of college a cappella singing. Now.
you say now before the rest of us can be like, right.
Now. For example, you will see this. I blame Ed Helms for this in part because Ed Helms brought this to the character of Andy Bernard on The Office, who he explains was in a group at Cornell. He goes through all these different, there have been a whole series of jokes about this on The Office, the fact that he used to be in this group and he knows all these guys.
That he is a particular type of dweeb.
Exactly. That this is like, of all the dweeby things about him, this is like one of the king dweeby things about him, which I think is really goofy and unfair. And then they had this season of The Amazing Race, they had these two dudes who are in this group at Princeton. And that kind of became this like, make fun of them. They're college a cappella singing nerds.
And well, I made fun of them because they were.
Yeah, I know you did. The other reason why I blame Ed Helms, this is personal. Ed Helms went to Oberlin, as I did, and he was in the men's group at Oberlin only a couple years after I was in the women's group at Oberlin. And we were a little bit, there was a little bit
of rivalry
there, of course. Well, they were much more famous than we were. When I first got to Oberlin, the men's group was very well established. They wore tuxes on stage. They toured.
I'll bet they did.
They toured. Yeah, and you would watch them on stage, and they would be, like, trying to be all smoothie and everything. Right up until the point where one of them actually gave out his phone number on stage. And I was like, that's just adorable, you turkey. Anyway, so not only is he the guy that I blame for this, but he also was a member of that group.
Of a college a cappella group. Now, it should be noted that the a cappella group that he was in at Oberlin was called
The Obertones.
The Obertones. And not as it was on The Office, Here Comes Treble.
Now, here's the other thing I'm going to tell you. That makes no sense.
because no men's group would call
unless they have all been castrated.
Exactly. And the way I know this
is this actually selling anybody on acapella?
Here's the thing.
We have yet to turn the corner.
The way I know this is that when I was at Overland, the group that I was in was women, and it was called Nothing But Treble. And the reason it was all women.
It might as well, the name might as well have been Kick Me.
But it wasn't.
My God.
Here's
my lunch money.
But it wasn't. This is the whole thing that I'm telling you, is that this was not met with disapprobation.
Not within your group.
No. Right? Not at all. Not at all. I mean, granted, I was on a campus of music nerds, but nevertheless, this was not this, like, you can't show your face if you do this. It was not that kind of activity. And I maintain it was not. We socialized. We went out. And I just feel that this has become a put-upon, oppressed cultural activity, and I blame Ed Helms. And I should have known that one of those guys...
It was going to be one of those guys.
Tones. Yeah. No, was going to come out and make trouble.
Or treble.
Far down the line. Yeah. I feel this needs to be rescued from the scrap heap because there's nothing wrong with a bunch of people standing in the classic a cappella formation, which we called the cantaloupe.
Now, did I just hear Mike stomp on the floor in approval?
And singing together in the spirit of peace and harmony.
Now, I think really...
At least it wasn't the melons.
I think to make Linda's point, we should hear an excerpt.
Yes.
I will try to produce one.
Not Here Comes Treble, but the actual name.
Nothing But Treble. It still exists, so don't make too much fun or they'll write you letters.
Dear current
members of this... And I should point out, a year and a half ago at my college reunion... I went on stage with them, with the rest of the alums, and sang a little song with them.
What was
it? I am not ashamed of this chapter of my past.
Was it We've Only Just Begun?
To sing!
It's Oberlin, you dummies. Okay, I'm just going to say right now, everybody can just bite. Because I personally have no shame about this. I'm not embarrassed.
I love the fact that I've mounted a defense of Andrew Lord Webber and I'm mocking Linda for being
it really is. It really is the chess club pushing us into lockers.
Yeah.
Okay, so next up we have, now that we can change the subject, we are going to return to...
Are we singing from here on out?
No.
Whose side are you on?
That's my favorite.
Whose side are you on, Barry Margaret?
I'm on your side.
Whose side are you on, Barry?
I really am. As long as there was some Andrew Lloyd Webber involved.
If the women don't stand together, then the Obertones will take over.
Well, if you don't stand together in a cantaloupe for
it's too cantaloupe for formation. Anyway,
or a cantaloupe.
It's the shape of a cantaloupe. Give me a break. Anyway, it is time for the regrettable television pop quiz.
Hey, Linda, is there some sort of song?
There is. There is, but I'm not singing it today because you've all made me feel ashamed and embarrassed. So I'm not singing today.
Trey, would you like to sing it?
I can do this for you today. It's the regrettable television pop quiz.
There you go.
And once again, Thompson's behind the beat.
I was about to say, maybe you should redo. I'm teasing.
I'm sure it's fine. Anyway, regrettable television pop quiz. And we've got three today. And if you do badly, I will make fun of you and make you feel shame.
When have we ever done that to you?
This show has gotten so judgy since I was last here.
It's true.
There's so much more shame.
All right, Mike, hit it on the first one.
You know what I was thinking about today, which is a trip? Is that the baby might come out left-handed. Because my grandfather is left-handed, and my dad, you know, he's got four brothers. Mm-hmm. Three of them are left-handed. And if it's a girl... And it's left-handed. I don't know why, but that, to me, that comes across masculine. Is that weird?
Why?
I don't know. Left-handed girls trip me out.
It just looks weird. The hand, the way it is, and...
Is that a weird thing?
Babe.
I was just thinking, I mean, poor thing. Am I weird for that?
Absolutely.
Bling, bling.
Wow. Ooh, wow. I got nothing.
I will give you a hint. I'm going to give you the subtitle of the show. It is subtitled Saved by the Baby.
Is this Mario Lopez's
Mario Lopez! Saved by the Baby, the reality show starring Mario Lopez.
He was saved long before he had a baby.
He was. He was saved by Dancing with the Stars, yes. If you want to be honest about it. Yeah. He was saved by Tom Bergeron.
Weren't we all?
So, yeah. Mario Lopez, Saved by the Baby, who is concerned about the possibility that his baby will be left-handed.
Wow. Is that a weird euphemism? I have no idea what that means.
Like, well, the thing that's particularly interesting about it is he only seems to be bothered by the idea that the baby will be left-handed if the baby is a girl.
If the baby is a girl.
Yeah. Right. It's not an issue if the baby is a boy.
Right.
It's perfectly okay for boys to be left-handed, but if girls are left-handed, they are masculine.
Right.
Oh, wow. Something real weird happened to him in his youth.
I bet he hasn't considered the possibility that the boy might be ambidextrous.
Yeah, well, he does hang around with show business people. He was on Dancing with the Stars. Yeah. So, I think he would have considered the possibility that the boy would be.
So is that show just basically just a big sop to his wonderful life?
It's basically
is there anything interesting?
Does he wear a shirt?
Yeah, for those of us,
he wears a shirt mostly.
I'm just,
there's really no. I rarely, just out of
curiosity,
just wondering.
All right.
Yeah, he really does.
What is the actual premise of the show for those of us who have never encountered the title before today?
You know who Mario Lopez is?
I do not.
Mario Lopez was a child star. He was on a show called Kids Incorporated, but then for a longer period of time, he was on Saved by the Bell.
That much I had deduced.
He was on Saved by the Bell, and then he sort of disappeared, and then he came back. He's hosted a bunch of like game shows and cable shows and stuff like that. But then he went on Dancing with the Stars a few seasons ago. Okay. Dancing with the Stars.
Isn't he a correspondent on
TV? He hosts Extra.
Sorry, I'm like,
he hosts Extra, which is one of those dumb celebrity magazine shows.
He's a journalist, you mean?
I'm sorry, yes, he's a journalist.
Yeah, somehow he's beneath us.
So that's what he does now. So this is just his celeb reality show about how he hangs out with his beautiful wife. And they are having a new baby.
Why does he need to be saved? I don't understand.
Was the marriage was on the rocks before?
Well, no, but it's just a Saved by the Bell joke, and okay. I think they just threw in the baby.
There's no built-in dramatic tension.
No. It's kind of bumbling attractive dude and his bumbling efforts to be a new dad.
He does have nice dimples.
He does have very nice dimples.
There's some tension in there.
He was a good dancer when he was on Dancing with the Stars. He was quite good. Anyway, so number two.
Mary, my name's Jason. This is Grant.
Oh, whatever your name may be, if it's not Mary.
Are you in here?
If you can confide in us.
I know what this is.
Oh, is that...
This is Ghost Hunters wherever they are now, right? Ghost Hunters Akron.
It is Ghost Hunters.
Hunters in Akron.
They were for this one at a large old abandoned school where there was a girl and she was murdered in the basement and the janitor did it and now his spirit walks the halls.
So did they talk to the spirit of the janitor or the spirit of the girl?
Well, they were trying to reach the spirit of the girl. I don't think anyone wanted to talk to the janitor
as a backup.
The janitor probably didn't die there.
So I was having a little conversation with our producer, Mike Katzif, about this earlier today. And my favorite part of it is the part where one of the ghost hunters attempted to lure the ghost out of hiding by saying she had candy. And what I said to Mike is, so either you're taking the position that the ghost can eat candy, or you're taking the position that the ghost has been rattling around in an abandoned school for 80 years and hasn't yet learned that it can't eat candy.
Right. Don't take candy from ghost hunters.
Don't take candy because you can't eat it because you lack a corporeal form. So they were, you know, they were just kind of rattling around looking for Mary. That's what they were doing.
Right. See, it's funny when he said confide in me, and this is how I always feel when I see the clip, you know, bits of it, is that they seem sort of menacing. If I were a ghost, I always kind of want to, like, I don't think you're the guy I want to confide.
Why am I going to come out for you?
No.
Well, you and your cameras. Yeah. Get your crew out of here.
No wonder they need the candy. That guy is weird. Yeah.
You and your K2 meters.
And in fact, you know, what she's thinking is probably, last thing I remember Mom telling me is, don't take candy from strangers.
Look where it got her.
Exactly.
Who knows what the janitor used?
Exactly. So now she's dead.
So is it four people who believe that these schmoes are contacting ghosts?
Yes, it is for people who believe that it's at least possible that these schmoes are contacting ghosts.
Yeah,
so it's ghost hunters. And on to the third.
I have done nothing for the past year but plan this wedding and
but
it was supposed to have been ready.
It's not!
You promised me!
We're not contracted to give you a service until Saturday!
I'm sorry. It is a long clip, but we had to really hang in there until you hear her explain that she does not want him to yell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's no yelling.
Wow.
I feel like Steven should know what this is.
I feel like I should too.
I'll give you a little more background.
I mean, there are many wedding-based Bridezilla-ish.
It is, in fact, Bridezilla.
It is Bridezilla?
Oh, it is.
I thought Bridezilla's was just on Fox.
It is Bridezilla's.
No, it is actual Bridezilla's.
It is actual Bridezilla's. It is the real TM show, the Bridezilla's, on Wii TV.
So why did she wind up on Bridezilla's?
Well, the thing that's great about this clip is she's at the limo service where she's getting the armored car limousine for her wedding. And they've promised her...
For obvious reasons.
I don't know if you picked up on the tension in that scene, but what's going on is they promised her that the car was going to be ready on Wednesday for her to look at because they're rebuilding the car. And then she got there on Wednesday and it wasn't ready, so you might have been able to tell she was a little upset. And
the way she reacted, it seems as if there's a genuine threat that she may be riddled with bullets.
Yeah, and the guy was making the point that the wedding isn't actually until Saturday, so the fact that they don't have the car completely ready on Wednesday might not be the end of the world, but
I could tell there was a scheduling conflict.
She maintains that he promised her Wednesday, and so she's extremely upset.
She is.
I don't know if you could tell.
I always love how they come up with their subjects for that show, because they basically say that they're like shooting B-roll footage about weddings or something
like
that.
Well, that's how they got the first one. Yeah, that's how they did the first one.
But I don't think they, to this day, say, we're here because of a TV show called Bridezilla.
I think they do
we're
now.
We're here because of I one think called Beautiful Bride.
I think they do now.
Who are nice and accommodating.
I think they do now.
Title subject to change.
But the first one, I believe it's produced like all other shows, and I think you do actually know it's Bridezilla's. But the first one, it is true, it was called, they said they were, and in fact, they were originally trying to shoot and were going to shoot something called Manhattan Brides. I believe it was called Manhattan Brides. And they just got in there and started shooting these people getting ready for their weddings and eventually...
Having meltdowns.
And they had so many meltdowns
like,
that they eventually...
Get a load of this.
They eventually decided that the money was to be made by making it into a show called Bridezilla's, for which one of them eventually sued, one of the women from the original thing. But the problem is when you sign the release...
You sign that release, it's done.
The release
it's a done
is
deal.
Basically says you can take it and sell it to somebody else because the original production company sold it to Fox.
Right.
And the original production company wasn't even the one that wound up making the ultimate show.
Yeah, they just turned the footage over.
And they seriously sell your footage to whoever they want.
You sign that release. That release basically means we can call the show Get a Load of These Jackasses.
Yes, that's true. Absolutely. That's
how I wound up on the show Get a Load of These Jackasses.
Steven was on the first season, which was the good one, before it got stupid. We call Get a Load of These Jackasses the golden years. Anyway, so that is the regrettable television pop quiz for this week. And then our final topic, as always, is something that is making us happy this week. Do you have something making you happy this week, Barry Hardiman?
I do. I work for a news program. And last week I was covering news. There was an election. And I found that the only thing I could come home and read was Judith Krantz.
Yeah.
If you are not familiar with Judith Krantz, first of all, shame on you. Second of all, she is one of the great romance novelists. Probably somewhere your mother in a drawer has scruples, et cetera, et cetera. I reread Mistral's Daughter, and maybe I was a little, you know, I mean, I read about a lot of appropriations bills last week. I'm not going to lie to you. So it's possible that my judgment was somewhat impaired. But I want to actually say that aside from some truly regrettable language used to describe...
parts of men.
Let me guess, was it?
Parts of men, parts of women, and how they
interlock.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. In fact, interlock may be, sadly, one of the verbs. Yes. But this is a novel that spans three generations. It includes actual history of, World War II and the French Resistance. It has glamour. There's a central mystery that has to be solved. I'm telling you, when I flipped the flap shut and looked at that
was again with the language. We apologize to all of you.
Especially you, Ms. Krantz. I'm telling you, I felt truly satisfied and that I had seen... And when I say truly satisfied, I think we all know what you mean.
I spontaneously came of age reading it.
Oh, go But we have touched previously on Barry Hardiman's fondness for this particular genre. Area of fiction.
We have.
And there are many areas.
Barry, who that get touched.
So that's the good news. But it really, I think she gets unfairly maligned because I also read a V.C. Andrews novel this week, I can say. And I love V.C. Andrews, too. And Judith Krantz actually wrote a book. Like, this is a real novel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not just like a collection of sort of like random coming of age plus rape and incest the way that...
I'm with you.
Yeah. So, good job, Ms. Krantz. And,
and thanks for the...
Keep it up.
Thanks for the memories.
All right. How about you, Trey?
Well, I didn't bring anything major today, but I am going to say that, you know, one thing that is making me happy today is that I know Stephen Thompson will be very happy today if he has, by chance, discovered the new teaser trailer for Kung Fu Panda 2.
Yes!
Because if I recall, Stephen Thompson is of the opinion that Kung Fu Panda was pretty much the pinnacle of cinematic achievement.
I am of the opinion that Kung Fu Panda is awesome. Kung Fu Panda is a really, really good, fun movie.
Kung Fu Panda, I think one of Steven's, major pop culture positions he's ever taken was that Kung Fu Panda was better than WALL-E the year that they both came out.
And he would not be alone in this assessment.
I agree.
I read a little note today that sort of was taking off on the fact that Megamind, which is from the same studio, made a haul of money.
Yeah, almost $50 million. Yeah.
And they were the person who was writing this, I think it was on Cinematical today, was talking about how people tend to think of DreamWorks Animation as this sort of low-rent counterpart to Disney Pixar. And that they shouldn't, because starting with Kung Fu Panda, there's been sort of
How to Train Your Dragon is
starting.
Terrific.
Yeah, absolutely terrific.
And
now Megamind has gotten terrific reviews from the critics. Mm-hmm. And the writer was tracing this upward arc back to Kung Fu Panda.
So, Kung Fu Panda is a terrific movie. And for those who are still picking up their jaw at the assertion that Kung Fu Panda is better than WALL-E. I think Kung Fu Panda is better than WALL-E.
Look,
WALL-E
is
fantastic for the first 45 minutes
and then becomes an incredibly
conventional, sophomoric,
conventional, and pointed in a way that
ninth
I think it
grade
doesn't need
satire.
To be.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. I agree.
But oh my God, the first 40 minutes are awesome.
Oh, first 45 minutes.
Gorgeous.
The first 45 minutes are, I highly recommend WALL-E. I am very fond of WALL-E, but I think there are much better Pixar movies.
Mm-hmm. Yes, agreed.
Up is one of my favorite movies of all time in any genre.
Although that also has a first 40 minutes that is really, really fantastic. And
I think
they do well at the
beginning. The balance is closer.
I think it's
but they have a
weighted towards the front end. I agree with Barry. Yeah. I think that one is front loaded as well.
Yeah. Before we move on completely, I would just like to say that while I am happy for Thompson's happiness, I am personally gladdened by the fact that the subtitle for Kung Fu Panda 2 is The Kaboom of Doom.
Oh, he's so happy.
I will watch the hell out of that movie. I think I liked Kung Fu Panda better than my kids did.
I thought you were going to say you liked them better than your kids.
No. I would never say that.
All right, go ahead, Thompson.
What is making me happy is something that I have not yet done, but I'm about to do, which is spend $100 to commission Eef Barzilay to write a song.
Wow.
If you go to clemsnide.bigcartel.com, the amazing singer-songwriter Eef Barzilay, maybe my favorite singer in the world, he will write you a song. You can sort of give him...
Oh, anybody?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Really?
Yeah, not just me. Anybody.
It's I
not
thought like, it was just a fancy Stephen Thompson thing, but even me?
Even you. As a matter of fact, you're having a baby.
I was going to say, you should have him write one for
and
you.
He awesome. Really, I will say, his capacity for writing incredibly affecting, very sincere love songs.
Yeah, and songs for kids.
Yeah. I've got a collection of demos from a record that he did called Soft Spot, and those demos were my kids' lullaby music for years and years, the first however many years of their lives. Yes, for your kid.
Oh, this is great. Sorry, I didn't mean to horn in on your happy.
No. The whole point of what's making us happy is that the world may horn in on our happy.
Absolutely. We can share.
And so, I believe horn in on your happy is in Judith Krantz.
I think the horn is the operative.
So what is making me happy is that I am going to commission Eef Barzilay to write some sort of song.
I can't even imagine what that song is going to be like.
I am just thinking.
That we may just put on Pop Culture Happy Hour at some point.
I'm so glad.
Because I bet Eef Barzilay would be willing to let us do that. So go to Clem Snide, which is the name of Yves Barzelay's band, if you don't own Your Favorite Music, which is quite possible. It's an album by Clem Snide that may be my favorite album of all time.
Yep.
If you have not yet bought that record, please do.
Agreed.
And go to clemsnide.bigcartel.com and buy yourself a song.
That's, I might have to do that my own self. Yeah. All right. And what is making me happy this week? You know, I have tried not to spend too much time talking about things that my friends do because, you know, we don't want to go too far down that road. But I cannot tell a lie that my big discovery of this week is a new podcast
yes.
that is being done by friends of mine. The podcast is called Extra Hot Great, and it is at extrahotgreat.com. And it is hosted by my friends Dave Cole, Tara Ariano, and Joe Reed. And Dave and Tara are two of the three founders of Television Without Pity, where I worked for a long time. Joe Reed has contributed at Monkey See, is also was also a writer for Television Without Pity, and is my former roommate in Brooklyn. They are all dear, dear friends of mine. But it is a terrific pop culture podcast, and they're great. They're really funny. They're silly. They play games. They did this amazing game identifying songs from 80s movies. And not the most famous songs from 80s movies, like not the ones that were hits, but like how every 80s movie had that song that played like over the credits or the song that played like it was always either Kenny Loggins or like a Kenny Loggins.
The song
imitator.
That immediately popped into my head was Meet Me Halfway by Kenny Loggins.
It's you know, it would be like the one that was played during the montage or
sure.
during the opening credits or the closing credits or whatever. And these corny and they all sound alike. The quiz is amazing because I listened to it. I was like, I might recognize some of these. But then you get there and only a few of them because the rest of them are just this. It's this wall of 80s movie music. And I strongly recommend that you try the quiz, see how you do. They have a feature called The Canon where they discuss whether particular famous episodes of television history should be voted into the canon or not.
Oh,
and
nice.
The three of them then get do thumbs up and thumbs down to see whether it'll get two thumbs up to make it into the canon.
Into the canon. Mm.
And they are all enormously smart, funny people. Like I said, Extra Hot Great. You can follow them on Twitter at Extra Hot Podcast. And fantastic.
It should be noted for the benefit of people who listen to our podcast with their kids.
Yes.
That Extra Hot Great is not kid friendly.
Correct.
That we do our best, Judith Kranz references aside, to keep this podcast clean. My kids listen to this
podcast
every week.
We're pretty clean. Extra Hot Great, I was going to mention, is more of a more for the grown-ups. If you like this, but you wish we swore more.
If you like this, but wish we sucked less.
Yeah. And Sven said a lot more F words.
I actually read then. From Judith Kranz.
Yes.
I have to say, I'm really shocked to find that this is a kid-friendly. I feel that I was not given all the information before I sat down.
For the most part. We're pretty kid friendly. Anyway, so that brings us to the end of another Pop Culture Happy Hour. And you can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Steven at I Dislike Steven. That's STEPHEN. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham, which Steven likes to render as
Trey with an E, then Graham like the cracker.
Never gets old.
You can follow our illustrious producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. You can follow Barry Hardiman. We're trying to get her to tweet more.
No, I did. I
You wouldn't believe what just almost happened.
I think we all do. I think we all know exactly what almost just happened.
It's the past tense.
Oh, dear.
All right. We're trying to get Barry to tweet a little bit more. Did you tweeted more?
I
recently?
Have, actually. And I am committed to it.
And you're at
obviously.
B. Hardiman, right?
I'm at B. Hardiman.
How do you spell Hardiman?
H-A-R-D-Y-M-O-N.
You can also follow the wonderful Glenn Weldon, who is not here right now, at G-H Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N. And also thanks to Mike's band, Hello Come In, for providing our wonderful and awesome and uplifting music. Thanks to all of you guys for dropping by the happy hour.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
And,
so happy to be here.
And we will see all of you at home next week.